Hello and welcome to StarCast from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, the host of Planet Waves FM on Pacifica Radio, author of the Planet Waves Horoscope, which is off this week, and here with a StarCast edition for the Planet Waves weekly edition of July 23rd, 2026. Before I get into the extraordinary astrology of July 23rd, leading into the full moon next week, two house announcements. Well, actually, no, I don't know how many house announcements. I have just finished the reading for Leo called Take That Ride. This is part of the birthday reading series, which became Astrology Studio, which is now Astrology in Motion, which is a series of video readings. The more that I get into video, the more I'm realizing how excellent it is for astrology, particularly with this feature that I've created, which is the ability to point a camera directly at the chart. I used to hold the chart up on a piece of cardboard. I had no idea how to do this or that it even could be done. You know, there's not a lot of guidance to be found on the internet. You have to know what you're looking for, and then, you know, you hope somebody's got a YouTube video and all that. And there's never this time where your professor or your older brother or big sister or someone helps you figure things out, unless you get really lucky. So it's kind of like one gigantic DIY, except if I'm teaching you astrology, and then you get that sense of an older brother or more experienced person helping. And that's exactly what I aspire to do with these video readings. And this new one, yesterday, it's a solid hour of astrology. There's a lot in there. I do speak slowly. My intent is to not, compact a lot of, data oversampled into a short period of time. So I do my best to go slowly and explain things several different ways. And I've got the chart cam on the whole time. And what I did this time is I build the chart from a blank wheel, one planet at a time. Usually I, present you, I have in the past anyway, presented you with the whole chart. This is very difficult to understand. But when you see the chart come together, one planet at a time, and I start with Jupiter in Leo and then go to a fairly long discussion of the impact on relationships for Leo of Pluto in Leo and the retrograde of Juno and Pluto, which, by the way, is exact today. And so I'm talking about getting a handle on what has become of and what continues to change in your relationships owing to the fact that, our entire society has been submerged underneath a kind of a digital ocean like Atlantis, being flooded, the sunken, we are kind of the sunken continent. Only the thing we're sunken under is this seemingly invisible ocean of zeros, ones, and algorithms. And I cover that and talk about how this is shaping what most Leos really want to have a stable social existence, in the way that this has been changing quite rapidly. It's been quite a few years of this, but Pluto in Aquarius is special. And then I cover Chiron and Taurus shaping reputational, professional type of activities. And then I go through all the other major transits. So it's a really nice thing. And it's, for a custom video reading, it's $333. That, I think, is quite worth it, because it will be the best reading you've ever had of your chart. But for a reading of the solar chart, it's $33, and it is quite a lot of helpful astrology. I know my natal chart well, and my solar chart is every bit as relevant as my natal chart. I've written thousands of horoscopes based on the solar chart. In fact, about getting close to 30,000 individual sign readings. That's more than one for every seat in Madison Square Garden. And anyway, this will be helpful, and you'll appreciate it. So check for this. I'm going to do a video in a little while, before I go back to the Greene County Youth Fair, and there'll be mailings coming out over the weekend. Second, this is no longer... Now let's go into the astrology. Oh, by the way, that reading's included with Astrology Pass and Galaxy Pass. The best deal on the internet. Really juicy subscription product. All right. So astrology has a tendency to never look back. Astrology does not look back on its successes or on its failures. And just 1 week ago, there was a whole brouhaha, I guess to use the 18th. I haven't looked up what era that word, that expression comes from. Brouhaha, a rhubarb. That comes from the movies. Where the crowd, at like if you wanted to make a crowd sound restless in a shot in the movies, they would get everyone to say rhubarb, rhubarb. And that's where the expression comes from. Imagine, you know, 300 extras all saying the word rhubarb, rhubarb. Well, there was a big rhubarb with a bunch of extras saying a word that was absolutely meaningless. And it was going to be the big change of everything and all of that. And we're going to have the Barbo basket and all the stuff. And what I said was, you know, I've seen a lot of these campaigns on the internet. I've seen a lot of astrologers go viral or attempt to go viral with a reading of some kind, saying, you know, this one is the big one. Normally speaking, of an aspect pattern, and then it turns out that there was nothing special. And I said this: it's not going to be about this day. This whole pattern describes the era. And if you go back to the beginning of the year in my videos on the where I was saying, well, we're about to experience the big one. And that was a series of events that began in around January and spanned well through the spring. That was an accurate reading. And I showed how this chart develops over time. It's always about the development of the chart. It's never about the individual single chart. Astrology is much more of a wave, planet waves, not planet particles. Not so much a particle, not so much following the bouncing ball, but watching the pattern created by different waves. And so, the era we live in is very important. I'm not saying much, but I'm carefully following events in the Strait of Hormuz and the Red Sea, and partly because I am in slightly slowed down mode, but also because I'm not here to depress you. Things are not going well, and I'm following the AI story very carefully. I continue to take in. I don't sit at my desk and watch. I listen. That's one of my YouTube habits. I miss all the awesome video editing over the talking heads, which are mostly, you don't need to stare at people's faces to hear their voice. This is getting even weirder and weirder as, this situation goes further out into this kind of abyss, and no one really is recognizing where we are. And this technology, which is not, there's absolutely no intelligence connected to the whole concept of artificial intelligence. It's merely a word that was slapped on it. In a proposal, by the way, written 71 years ago for a conference at Dartmouth University, proposed to the Rockefeller Foundation, our good friends at the Rockefeller Foundation. Yes, they funded the first program with the name Artificial Intelligence 70 years ago this summer, a summer conference, a kind of summer school for mathematicians and nascent programmers. In any event, there is no intelligence, there is no contextual knowledge connected to it. These models are getting very powerful. They can do things that no other computer system can do, but they still have difficulty counting to 100, even to 10, because they don't understand what they're doing. And so it can seem intelligent, it can seem like this fabulous illusion of intelligence, but when you realize it cannot count to 100, the demonstration I saw, none of the models could count past about 7 because they didn't understand the concept. You say to a child, okay, count to 100. It's going to start counting. It may skip a couple of numbers, but it understands that it's going from 0 to 10, and then from 10 to 20, and 20 to 30, and it's going to be excited about it, too. It's kind of fun when you're little to count all the way to 100, and then you get there, and then you realize, wow, I could keep going. For a while, by the way. Numbers, I don't know if you know this, but you can keep counting for a long time. Anyway, large language models don't know this, but they are infiltrating every phase of our lives at this time. I don't think I saw one hint. I didn't read with the excruciating, exacting care. I'm really not that interested in the opinions of other astrologers. I'm interested in the opinions of Elizabeth Shepherd on my team. I'm interested in the opinions of my proofreader, Allison and Lisa York. She's got good ideas about astrology. These are people I'm in touch with every day. I write an email to Melanie Reinhardt. She's got something intelligent to say. But for the most part, I am really not that interested in the opinions of other astrologers because it's stuff like this. The shit that gets 100,000 views turns out to basically be irrelevant. And it was a big song and dance. And so we have to, I think, reflect on this as astrologers, of course, most don't. This is a point made by Jeffrey Cornelius in The Moment of Astrology, one of the best books I have ever read, not just astrology books, but any books of any kind. You have to know some astrology to read the book because it's a study in charts and how to read charts. So basically you have to be able to follow along, but it's a phenomenal book. And you learn all these things about everything. It is such a beautiful work, but he says, you know, astrology has got this terrible problem, which is that it's always making predictions and then it's never looking back and saying, did we get it right? I will tell you that exactly what I said is what came to pass with this Barbo basket thingy. Barbo, by the way, credited with predicting pandemics. Unfortunately, that turns out to not be true either, for scientific reasons and not astrological. He was seeing something, but he was not seeing, he did not accurately predict pandemics. Okay, so that said, and that should, I think that there deserves to be more reflection on this. And I think that in closing, I will say that the thing about this pattern, which is still holding and which we're going to get another kind of burst of when we experience the full moon in a few days, is that the full moon is going to trace the Jupiter-Pluto opposition, which is also a Juno-Jupiter opposition and also a Pluto-Vulcanus opposition, like usual. If I may pound my own chest here, I usually write about the things that nobody else writes about. I see the things in charts that nobody else sees. Well, one commenter on YouTube was noticing the presence of Vulcanus, one of the Uranian points, a hypothetical planet in this. And that is the underlying power dynamic. And that is the thing that is going to be present long, long after Jupiter has moved on into late Leo and even into Virgo. The Pluto-Vulcanus opposition is going to be part of this pattern. And it's indicating a new stage of life in that Pluto's in a new sign and Neptune is a new sign and Uranus is in a new sign compared to 2 years ago. All right, that said, let's look at the 23rd. And then I'm going to do a read on the full moon chart, and then I'm going to leave you to your day and recommend some new videos that I have done. All right, so today's a big day. You're probably getting this in the afternoon. The first thing that happens is that the sun, newly in Leo, is square Chiron. So I cover this in detail in a video with the chart open. This is a kind of attempted integration of the masculine principle of the sun in Leo and the feminine principle of Chiron in Taurus. Chiron, yes, Chiron's named after a male mythological figure, but Chiron is marvelously adaptable and brings out the true underlying nature of anything that it comes in contact with. This is a very important function of Chiron, to bring out the true underlying nature of things. And so we have the true underlying nature of Taurus being revealed, and this is about the disembodiment crisis that is at the very heart of our continent being, the lost continent of the Western world, deep beneath the digital ocean. This is a disembodiment crisis. And what Chiron is doing is it is calling attention back to physicality, back to physical existence, sensory existence, right? Now, one highly significant thing about all of these planetary sign changes, and please do let me know if you've read someone else talking about this, is that all of the sign changes, including Jupiter going from Cancer to Leo, Uranus going from Taurus into Gemini, Neptune and Saturn going from Pisces into Aries, and Pluto going from Capricorn into Aquarius, all represent sign changes from feminine signs to masculine signs. And the outer planets really do run the table. They are the powerhouses of the chart. And the smaller planets, the inner planets and the luminaries, are just basically picking up and amplifying the themes of the slow-moving outer planets. And in terms of what is normally accessible, Chiron entering Taurus is the only movement that we are experiencing into a feminine sign. And I'm not talking about the ladies. I'm talking about the entire feminine, as in receptive, as in sensory, as in tactile, physical aspect of existence. And so Chiron is going to be doing a lot of work as it makes its approximately 7-year run through Taurus. As part of that, Chiron next year in 2028 will be in a long square to Pluto in Aquarius. That is unofficially starting now. It's a little bit out of orb. Chiron's going to retrograde back into Aries, so it's we may be getting little hints of that here and there. But here again, in a way similar to Jupiter, rather the Sun in Leo square Chiron, we just had Jupiter in Leo square Chiron. This is just going to highlight the urgency of coming back home to the life of the senses. Fritz Perls, himself a Taurus, said that we need to heal. To be sane people, we need to lose our minds and come to our senses. And what he meant by that is that people tend to be mentally obsessed to the exclusion of the basic information coming in by way of their senses. And this is this is disorienting. And it has never been more true that we are in some, major cerebral mode right now with all of this stuff. The entire internet is kind of a head trip. Everything exists only in mind, but then in mind is projected onto the kind of screen, right? The whole problem with the digital realm, the whole problem with the phone, is that people are carrying their brains around with them in their hands. So the whole function of thinking and memory was long ago externalized to the square. I hate calling them phones. I had a guest on Planet Waves FM who called them squares. She had a dream a few years back where she went back in time and warned her high school friends about these things that were coming called the squares. And they were going to take everything from them that was precious to them, meaning their friendships and their experiences and their their sensory perception and their ability, you know, to experience things like in the moment live without having to hold up the camera and record it, which is like the most ridiculous thing in the world. You go to a concert and everybody's holding up their camera, like they can't just have the experience. And I think, you know, I'm a devoted photographer. There are times I will leave my camera in the car to have the experience of the thing that I'm at, and fuck the photos. And I think that there's a lot of interference created by holding up these squares that takes us out of sensory life. And she warned her friends, and one of them was very intrigued by the power that this thing would bestow. You know, he knew that it was going to be some kind of a special thing, you know, some special tool. And he wanted one. Anyway, that quite an interesting, prescient dream. Chiron is about this it's kind of a vortex back into physicality. You know, Chiron always comes along with a little bitty crisis, and so we've got that crisis. And then, and in terms of Sun and Leo square, Chiron and Taurus, we are in a crisis of masculinity right now. Masculinity is being pushed into crisis by certain political philosophies, and to be honest, one of those political philosophies is that the women, you may not agree with this, but the political philosophy is that the women will dominate the men at all costs. That's it. You guys are going down. You had your chance. We're going to run the planet now. And that is obviously a bunch of horseshit, because we have to, we're in this together. We need each other. If you glance like on page 2 of any half-decent Tantra book, you find out that something that's plainly obvious, which is that the universe as we know it is held up by the masculine-feminine polarity. And it is the masculine-feminine polarity that is under assault, not only by political philosophy, which I think is coming along for the ride of the technology environment, but the technology environment itself is neutering everyone. It is stripping away the masculine and the feminine, because here in digital space, no matter how lovely and male my voice may sound, I'm actually speaking to you through a disembodied voice. I do my best to project my full humanity consciously through you. There is a telepathic aspect to the internet when people are aware and have their senses open. I'm clearly working on that wavelength as well as the digital wavelength, but there's also that facet of this experience where I am a disembodied voice in the digital astral plane. The entire internet is pretty much like this, because no, there are no men or women on the internet. And when we beam back down to Earth, we've left behind a little bit of who we are on the internet. And you have to really pay attention and work to fully, consciously bring yourself back into your incarnated physical form, to keep living as an embodied man or woman. And the political angle on this is just brutal. And there's a lot of women who just kind of laugh this off. You know, the ones who are more politically attuned and or don't have sons or don't like their husband or don't like their father. And it's like, screw you, in the immortal words of Eric Carfin, screw you guys, I'm going home. All right. Then later today, 6:57 p.m., actually 6:57:38, Mercury goes direct, and Mercury stations direct at, where is that going to happen? It's 16 degrees, 19 minutes of Cancer. So just past the midpoint of Cancer, just outside of a square to Saturn. That's nice. And we'll proceed in direct motion into a second or third. I'm not sure how many there were the first time. I think we're talking the third of three squares to Eris. So we're in the implied in this whole Mercury retrograde is Mercury square Eris. So that could be a little bit mentally chaotic, but I think also that Eris, while it represents the disembodiment factor of a digital space, that it also holds a key to embodiment. Cancer is a pretty embodied sign. It's emotional and it's parental and it's maternal, and it's the sign of things like mother's milk and things like that. And it really, really is the sign of mother's milk. There's no escaping that. And unless you got unfortunate and you weren't nursed as a baby. So Mercury square, Mercury square, I know what I'm talking about. Mercury square Eris is coming, but that's going to be in about 3 weeks. So I will have updates on that as the story develops. I think that this, I'll do closing comments in a second. Finally, on Thursday, the last thing happening, and this is all happening at the same time. It's not like these things happen, one at a time. I mean, there may be synchronicities where you're like, oh, wow, that happened at 11 o'clock in the morning, and that happened at 7 o'clock at night, and that happened at 10 o'clock at night. But around 10 o'clock, 5 to 10, say Joey, that's exactly what you get, is a Juno retrograde conjunct Pluto. This is an important one, I think. This is part of the Barbo basket pattern. Although, once again, we were Planet Waves, the only yokels talking about Juno. And in fact, Elizabeth has written a mighty fine article about Juno conjunct Pluto, and Juno conjunct Pluto means Juno, the I believe asteroid 3. Is let me verify that. I have trouble keeping the numbers of the first four asteroids straight. Obviously, it's one series. Yeah, it's one series, two Pallas, three Juno, four Vesta. But let's see. Minor planet numbers of the first four asteroids. And let's see how I did. One series, two Pallas, three Juno, four Vesta. Got it. Yes, I'm only the world's leading authority on the minor planets, and I actually knew that. Okay, so Juno joins this basket pattern in big style with a conjunction to Pluto, the marvelous six-pointed anti-planet on the edge of the cosmos. It's not. I'm amazed people just still say Pluto. Tracy Delaney listed on Serenu as the Pluto-Charon system. Yeah, it's at minimum binary. I believe that was discovered in 1978. When was... Yeah, the telescopes were so low resolution that... Charon discovered... Charon was discovered, that's the Pluto's binary pair, not its moon, its binary pair, June 22nd, 1978. So we're coming up on 50 years, right? Is that true? Yeah, we're coming up on 50 years since Pluto was discovered to be a binary. The telescopes were so shitty that they couldn't even see there were two things out there orbiting with Pluto. And in fact, there are six points. That's Pluto, Charon, Nix, Hydra, and hold on, Pluto system. Now this I should know, and I'm afraid I don't. The Pluto system consists of six objects that are orbiting one common barycenter. This is the important thing. They're off orbiting one common barycenter, and it's Pluto, Charon, Nix, Hydra, Kerberos, and Styx. Not sure how you pronounce that. Kerberos, where's the emphasis? And Styx, River Styx. So, six points. So we have Juno joining this six-pointed system, which we call, for shorthand, Pluto. The whole thing orbits together. They don't have different degrees of longitude. And so this, the theme I'm calling out with this is the relationships are often described by Juno, but the problem is it's very murky, shadowy concept of relationships that are described by Juno. Did I say Pluto? I meant Juno. Who is the divine consort of Jupiter in the Roman mythological system. In Greek, it's Hera and Zeus. And so Juno, mythologically, along with Hera, is known not only for her extreme jealousy, but her tendency to revenge and punishment, acting on that rage and jealousy, and also contempt, and also envy. And Juno, per Martha Westcott, represents the bone of contention in relationships. It's that red herring. It's that thing that's like, you'll never let go of that thing, and you're holding on to it forever, and it makes it impossible to be with a person, to relax and care about that person if you've got a constant bone of contention. Ask yourself, is this the way you live? Is there something that you just hold against people and that's it? You'll never forgive them for that thing. Well, what are you doing with them? Well, so Juno can represent that bone of contention. And Juno also, to me, represents the contemporary scenario where you have many women leaving their husbands because they're unhappy. That's the word that's used. That's this universal elixir. And you see it going around. And you see it in the TikToks and the dating websites. I have worked with a lot of clients getting divorced. I mean, so many that it just became depressing. But I have, to my knowledge, I have never had a client say that they want to leave their husband merely because they are unhappy. Had they said that to me, I would say to them what I'm going to say now. I would say that your happiness comes from you. Your husband is not the source of your unhappiness. How does this person treat you? Oh, he treats me very well. Is he kind to you? Yes, he's kind to me. Does he support you in the ways you need to be supported? Yes, but I'm still unhappy. And I would say, and this is the condition of a lot of women, it's not that they're in abusive relationships. It's not that their husband doesn't show up for dinner, doesn't buy them nice things or whatever. It's that they are simply unhappy. And I would say, in this hypothetical case, that your happiness must come from you. It can't be projected onto a relationship. And what happens is a lot of women do leave their partners because they're unhappy. Then they're out of the partnership. And then they realize that the unhappiness had nothing to do with their partner. Their unhappiness was was an unmet growth need, an unresolved inner condition, an unlived spiritual life that was being projected onto the relationship. Liz, in her article today, talks about my readings from 2012. Remember 2012? Anybody remember? Does anybody remember the good old days of 2012 when the world was going to end and there were panels and books and conferences and everybody got it wrong? Well, 2012, the only thing that was distinctive about the chart for December 21st, 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, and I read this chart like 300 times over 10 years, was a conjunction of Juno and the Sun, properly said Sun conjunct Juno, on that day in the first degree of Capricorn, part of the Aries point. And I thought, there's going to be a problem with heterosexual relationships or something up here. It turns out that Olbersgefell, I think that's I've got it slightly wrong there. Olbersgefell, the gay marriage decision came out, and to my chagrin and others, the queer movement did not go in the direction of advocating for heterosexuals having attained the promised land of same-sex marriage, went in the direction of transsexuality. And so once again, the heterosexual world, including all the kids who needed some real sex education, were pelted with disinformation coming from the kind of trans and multi-gender movement. I don't say this in any personal form of judgment. I can incarnate every single stripe on the LGBTQ flag. I can go through the whole thing. I can experience and express every phase of heterosexuality, bisexuality, and homosexuality. I'm not against that. What I'm saying is that this became a political assault on heterosexuality and the diminishment of heterosexuality and an underlying agenda of particularly the lesbian movement. Gay men don't care. Gay men, like, whatever, you know, fuck whoever you want. It's the lesbians. In the past, it was called the homosexual agenda, but there is, and I only know this because I have known lesbian-leaning feminists who have said to me their goal is to demolish heterosexual relationships. Even my friend Betty Dodson had a kind of a covert goal of demolishing. Kasia Urbaniak wanted to demolish, I don't know where she stands today, demolish heterosexual relationships. This is a thing. This is a thing in gender studies. It does not break the surface of the New York Times. It's kind of like wink and a nod. Well, okay. So, we're not going to get to the full moon today. I'm not going to bring in a new subject. Let's stick to this. So the whole matter of, if we strip away all of the mean stuff about Juno, and we just get to the question, what are the dynamics? What are the underlying dynamics of heterosexuality? Well, that's a pretty good question. And that is the question I'll leave you with today. And when I say the underlying dynamics, I mean the underlying dynamics now, today, under disembodying, gender neutralizing digital conditions. All right, I'm now going to record my little video talking about the Leo in motion reading. I'll mention the family patterns reading thing of beauty. I worked for months on this with a 2-year lead-in. I started this thing in 2024. All right, I leave you now in the capable fingers and musical mind of Kristen Williams. And her piece is called Sitting Still, written on a day when she didn't have to drive anywhere. All right, signing off from the Harshaw House in the Catskill Mountains of New York. Lots of love. And bye for now.